We're going to call this meeting to order. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of July, and it is 6:01 p.m., and we have a quorum. You guys want to do the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Have we got somebody joined?
Yeah,
if you look at the people.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he's waiting to come in. Okay.
Do I have an acceptance of the agenda?
I'll make a motion to accept the agenda.
Second it.
All in.
Okay.
From the plans with Anders.
And here he is. Right here.
There we go.
So Anders, we're having a big rainstorm right now. So I don't know if you maybe can't hear it in the background, but we're kind of talking really loud because it's a struggle a little bit. So
that's fine. We're having a heat wave here in southeast or southwest Michigan, and I'm in holiday mode, so forgive me.
And here's Lisa. Awesome. Perfect. All right, come on in. Peter, it's crazy. You want to have a seat here? We're just getting started with our consultants. So awesome. The floor is yours, Anders, if you want to.
Okay, well, you know, I think Susan asked me to give you an update as to where we are in our planning efforts. And I think one of the things that I wanted to share with you is a favorite description of what the planning process is. And that description maintains that planning is a series of approximations to a moving target. Yeah, and that's kind of the process that we're engaged with. I think it's especially true when we think of planning buildings, because during that process, there's a very natural sequence of, you know, kind of benchmark points where you can, you know, reassess and redirect and recalibrate as needed. You know, we took the first of those steps about a year ago with the initial needs assessment study, and that was a very high-level, broad-brush kind of view of the proposed service goals and space needs of the Pines and Plains Library. I like to call that the view from 30,000 feet. As we've started now to develop program, we're taking a more and more detailed look at the service goals and the space needs. Program development, I would liken to the view from 15,000 feet. In comparison with the original needs assessment in the program, we've started to describe the spaces that the library needs, you know, according to the departments and functional areas that we hope to create within that expanded building. You'll remember that in the original needs assessment, we talked about collection space and reader space and staff space and meeting space, because that's a way to simplify and consolidate the overall planning process for that step. In the programming stage, we've taken collection space, for example, and we've allocated the collection into adult and children's and teens and fiction and nonfiction into the children's area, preschool and readers and grade school and so on. And we've also started to define very specifically, in a very granular way, the environments that we want to use to house the collection. And that in turn allows us to make a more detailed estimate of the library's space need. And the program document is at a point where, you know, we believe that it's been developed sufficiently that the UTAP team can start to work with it effectively. There's enough detail and enough direction in the program that it can guide the UTAP team's thinking and strategizing and so on, the development of an initial design concept. I mean, there are some specific questions, I think, that have arisen, you know, as a result of the program development that we've done to date. You know, one of the concerns that I have and Susan and Sarah has is that as we've taken this more detailed, granular look, the space needs of the library have expanded a bit. In the needs assessment study, we were looking at a space need of around 25,000 square feet, and I believe the current version of the program calls out around 30,000 square feet. I think the estimate in the program, is valid and accurate. It comes about because, and the kind of the delta, the differential between the needs assessment and the program comes about, because, as we've been thinking about developing a two-level strategy within the existing building envelope, we have found it necessary to add some staff workstations that we didn't anticipate in the original needs assessment. We need to provide some staff coverage on the proposed second level. We've also, for example, taken the most, when we were thinking about the collection space specifically, we've typically taken the most generous strategy for deploying the collections. When I say generous, I mean the strategy that is going to build in a little bit more space because we've been emphasizing settings that are easy for people, humans, to use. Lower shelving, wider aisles, and so on. And, we can come back and revisit all of these considerations if we need to, but we wanted to start from that perspective. I guess the critical thing to keep in mind at this point is that this program document represents the library's instructions to the architect. It reflects the parameters that are that we want to see reflected in the design of the building, and it's the next step in what the beginning of a dialogue now that includes the UTAP team to explore options for realizing the goals that are expressed in the building program. Susan, I feel like I've been tumbling down a hill again. What else did you want me to touch on?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've covered, the basics, just kind of the basic difference between the document that you provided for us earlier and the program plan, and just kind of explaining, what the differences are. And then, I think you've touched on everything that we needed to touch on, I think.
Okay. What questions do the board members have?
I sent out the program plan earlier.
I thought the shelving and everything for the children, I thought it looked really nice the way that it was planned out. Mm-hmm. I was impressed.
It's a lot of details.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
Yeah.
I was glad we had a builder on the board.
Yeah, it's about 60-something pages.
I looked at the pictures.
Yes. That's good. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I think
anybody else have any questions? I think we're good.
Okay, awesome.
He can go back to his vacation.
Very good. I'm glad to have the opportunity to engage here remotely. I appreciate your going along with that. Don't have any other travel plans over the next several weeks, so the next time that we need to get together, I think it might be a little bit easier.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Excellent. Appreciate it. Thank you all. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, consent agenda. June 25th, 25 regular meeting minutes. That's a bit of red this time. I did it felt.
I looked at the minutes and I don't see any.
I had reviewed them.
I don't see any errors or anything.
So, I had reviewed them and they looked good to me. That was one of the other library.
Okay, and correspondence, we have none. June bank reconciliation. That's Alessandra. So,
we currently have in the CBC checking account zero, which means that the money is. That account is going to be closed.
But yeah, I believe it is already closed. So,
because the last time we had 13,000 in it, so that took care of that.
Yeah.
The new CBC account has 1,378,687.91 in it. The CBC payroll account is $40,569.70. The Colorado Trust account, $751,643.49. CSAFE 1 has $611,384.20. And the CSAFE 2 account, which has previously been referred to as the 3 account, which it is the 2 account. It has $740,718.48. And I compared it to the figures last time. And in general, it appears that the interest that we have earned has been added on to the amount. So.
And then if you look at the profit and loss budget and go to the third page and look at the third line from the bottom. So this is through June. So we've spent $644,526.87, and that is 41.53% of the year. And going to the end of June is 50% of the year, so about 8-point-something% below
where budget.
Below budget.
So we're still below budget.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. I guess I didn't do that. Ruth Ann, you are acknowledged that you did show up by Zoom. I'm sorry. I just was losing my mind.
That's okay. Anders was enlightening us.
Yes. Okay. June budget to actual.
I just did that.
You did that. Okay. Yeah. So do I have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I motion that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ruth Ann, raise your hand. Okay.
Assuming she agrees.
Yes. True. Okay. Committee reports. BOCC meetings this month.
Okay, I have a confession. I didn't go to today's meeting because I had an appointment. I couldn't change it. So I don't know what happened there. But I did go to the prior meeting. And part of the meeting had to do with us getting support for the 3-year term for the sheriff. So they went back and forth with that. And I think that's probably happened. So he's going to be able to run for a third term. Then somebody congratulated people for voting no for the power pathway. That's still up in the air. We don't know what's going to happen, but the commissioners did vote against the documents that were put forth by the power pathway people. So I suspect they're going to amend them and then resubmit. Water. One of the citizens asked about the GSDS report. Apparently there are a bunch of wells that they're monitoring and have done so in the past, and they stopped doing it. Now they started doing it again. He wants to know where the report is. And then he also wanted to know what the status is of a moratorium on building. There were no answers for that, actually. The severance pay apparently had to do with the lawyer who left, and he got $110,000. There's some kind of a discussion about that, but it really had no consequence to us. And that's pretty much it. Most of the discussion had to do with supporting the sheriff to a third term. And then they adjourned and they went off and did something. That's it.
All right. And I do August meetings, and maybe Miss Ruthann will join me, but maybe not.
I should be able to do the first one, probably not the second one.
Got it. Okay, so we have that covered. Susan, would you like to give us a committee report for the foundation?
Sure. Well,
you're president.
Yeah, since I'm president. Who made me president?
I have no clue.
Yeah.
You must have been late.
I wasn't. Yeah.
No, she was there early. She was just sleeping.
I was not sleeping.
I know.
No. So Sandy and Morale were there, of course, and we've just got an amazing group of people for the foundation, and we've organized them into committees now. We've got a committee for outreach and a committee for planned giving. So campaigns, like if we did one of the ideas was to put a list in the lobby of the library and say, you know, I've given to this level, like gold, silver, platinum level. And they've talked about the events. So how many events we're going to have, how much money we're going to try and raise from those events. And we've got a draft of a plan for the whole foundation of what they're going to do moving forward. So I'm just really impressed with the whole group and everybody. I think we've got a really good group of people.
We've scheduled meetings before our next meeting.
Oh, good.
Awesome. Outreach. And also events of scheduled meetings.
So the next foundation meeting, I'm going to be gone because I'm going to take off my birthday weekend. So I'll be gone Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So Morale has graciously agreed to chair that meeting since she's the vice chair. She's got so many meetings to chair.
Would you be nice? Okay.
But then in September, our foundation meeting is scheduled the same day as the garage sale / book sale. So we may just want to all come and help, you know. So
you should probably come and help before that, too.
Well, yeah, too.
Maybe you should reach out to the people that are on the foundation, because there's going to be a lot of work to be done.
And we can also.
What date is that on September?
September 20th. So we're going to try and sell off all the junk out in the warehouse that we can get rid of. Like if somebody wants the metal, because I know sometimes they can take
bookshelves and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, they can take the metal and get it recycled. And there's some nice wood out there that someone might like for, you know, wood projects or something. So and then they're going to do a book sale that day, too. So the foundation may want to do like a booth in the library to talk to people about what the foundation does. And
when you do the agenda.
Yes.
Put that so I don't forget it.
Absolutely.
Please.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes, because we've got pamphlets where we want to create.
Right.
One of the things that we're talking about is what the library provides for people. I don't think people realize the service is not just coming in and getting a book anymore. And in fact, Matt just told me today about the hotspot thing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Someone else the other day was telling me about the book bag or whatever it's called that you can go to state and federal parks.
Oh, right. Yeah. The park.
So we've got to get it. At some point, we've got to get a really good comprehensive list and figure out what format we want to use to get
it. Our meetings are normally 10 to 12.
Yeah. I don't know what the hours for the garage sale and the book. Yeah. I don't know for sure what those hours are, but. So cool. All right. That's enough of a foundation report.
Yep. Okay. Your director's report next.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Please.
I'll try and go through this real quick. So no articles in the newspaper that I saw. the newsletter, I hope that we're sending that to all of you. I've tried to get you on the list for the newsletter. It comes out around the 15th of the month, roughly.
The problem is I, for some reason, have an iCloud account that I don't use, and I think a lot of the stuff goes to it. So I'll talk to your workload and make sure you send to my regular email.
Make sure it's going to the Gmail. Okay. And then employee updates, just Kim's last day is coming up on the 31st, and we just wish her the best in her endeavors in the future. And I mean, she did a lot to expand the programming that we offered within Kiowa. So we're gonna really miss her. We have started interviewing for candidates to fill her position. And so we've got many good candidates. And other employee updates, I sent you my evaluation in the board packet. Did you see it?
I saw it.
You saw it? Okay.
Yeah. Your self-evaluation?
You did email a single one to us.
Oh, it's after the...
Yeah.
Just so you know, Susan sent you and I a copy of her self-evaluation, which she said it, so we can actually manipulate that document. So when you get back, you'll do our tag team to get that taken care of.
Okay. Sounds good.
And then onto the facilities. You know, Sarah and I have been reviewing the program plan. We've been through it, I think, 3 times already. And we sent the latest draft, to the one that I sent to you, we sent to Jeff Woods at UTAP for them to use, for the students to use. So last week was an amazing week. I started working by accident on the congressionally directed spending. And so I was able to talk with people from both Representative Lauren Boebert's office and from Senator John Hickenlooper's office. And both people came and toured the library, and I showed them what we're working on here. So it was, it's amazing to get. So we're going to apply for federal fiscal year 2027. And so we need to start in January. I'm supposed to contact them again and remind them that we're interested. Then the application window opens, and it's like only like 3 weeks that we have to apply. And so it's either April, May, or March, April timeframe. So we just have to be ready to apply. And then once we've done that application, and it's better to do it from both the House and the Senate, because then it looks like everybody's on board. So that's why we're applying through both offices. We have to decide what kind of bill we want to attach it to. And often it gets attached to a Department of Agriculture bill, because they work in rural areas to provide loans and that kind of thing. So they're more out, you know, in the communities. So it'll get attached to a bill, and then the bill will go to committee. And at some point we have to kind of do a verbal walkthrough and tell them what's in our grant application. It has to be very detailed, and hopefully we will have those details once UTAP has a budget for us. So it's kind of exciting. They recommend that we're more likely to get the money if we ask for $5 million or less. So we've kind of said, let's ask for $5 million. And so so what that does is then we'd get, we have roughly $2 million in savings, you know, if we're just kind of guessing. And then we've asked the foundation to come up with $3 million. So that gives us $5 million. And then we'd get another $5 million from this congressionally directed spending. So we would have about $10 million total. And then there will be other grants and things that we apply for to try. And so that gives us a good, you know, a good kind of basis. We could probably do, you know, a basic fix with $10 million. If we had another five on top of that, we could really do a really nice job.
So, but these are very, very rough. I mean, I'm just kind of telling you pie in the sky at the moment. So,
is it possible to get a copy of an application that someone has done so we can?
I bet I can, because I know on Senator Hickenlooper, on his website, he lists many libraries that he's been.
That would be helpful. Then you could just really start right.
Yeah. So we know the basic parts of it, and in February, pardon me, when I email them in January, they're supposed to like give me more of an outline of what it is that we need. The representative from Lauren Boebert's office said, "Do you have a grant writer?" Like, well, you know.
But if we have to hire one.
Right.
For that type of
right
application. Yeah. I would consider hiring.
And we can, I mean, we can definitely get an example, and then we can
find out what some other people have done and submitted.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have contacts with other libraries.
Right. And I know that other libraries have applied for this and gotten it. So we'll see what we can do. So construction next door. I don't know if you already have already read through this, but
I'm horrified.
So, the end of June, a fawn fell through the grate that the neighbors installed in just on our property, right before you go into the retention pond. And luckily, somebody either saw it happen or saw the mom being so distressed, the doe. So we got a call from the police department called us and let us know, and we just said. We said, go ahead and cut the chain. And so they cut the chain that goes into the retention pond, and they were able to retrieve the fawn. So it was the police department, the Elizabeth Fire Protection District, and Colorado Parks and Wildlife representatives. It was three, you know, a joint effort with three groups, and they got the fawn and brought it out and reunited.
So Bambi's okay.
So we did a temporary fix, or I should say Matt did a temporary fix.
Good job.
So we just we put chicken wire over it for now. And
so
then
nobody else can fall in.
Right now anyway. And we'll you know, hopefully later than it'll, I don't know if this is temporary. I have no idea.
Is that the one that we were worried about kids falling in?
Right. So with Touch a Truck, we're putting an employee's car right in front of it again. So that's what we did with the last event, just to keep nobody, you know, we don't want anybody to go over close to it. So
have you talked to them?
I don't have contact information for them yet, so I'm still working on that. So, but I've let, you know, I let the town know, and they know about the whole rescue operation and all that goodness. So so we had some safety inspections. Those are just our yearly inspections. So I had two more companies for the Kiowa ADA project. And I have not heard from them. I've contacted them. They've just disappeared. So I've got one more bidder that I'm going to try and talk to see if they are still interested in the project, because it's now over a year later. So we'll check with them.
Well, and something came up over the weekend when I was with the family. If we get really, only if we get really, really desperate, Sarah,
right.
Father is an engineer.
Okay.
And my son is a master electrician. And I was telling Sarah about our issue, and Sarah said, well, maybe Dad would want to look at it and do it. And he's been an engineer as long as I've known. So if we get in a real, I don't want to do this unless we're in a real bind.
Right. And we're not in a real bind yet.
Okay.
So, and then the roof, I'm working on getting quotes so that I can get the roof repaired hopefully next month. The insurance company recommended that we wait till the end of hail season so that we don't have to replace it twice in one summer. And then I've started also working on the budget. And I did a plan for the salaries for next year. I won't know until the end of the August, more of an estimate of what we'll have. Statistics, I don't know if you all have had a chance to look at that. If you have any questions about our statistics, it's this
this report right here. Our numbers are really looking good for our circulation and for our door count. It's all looking good. And so, for example, our program attendance so far this year is at 4,041, and last year our program attendance at this point was like 2,200. So we're doing really good with our numbers. Our summer reading program ends on the 31st of July, but if you are reading, you still have till August 8th to record your minutes and turn those in to finish your summer reading program. And if you don't want to do it on the app, we can give you a worksheet where you can just mark off the time that you've read, and you can just bring your worksheet back in.
If you're doing it on the app, does it just automatically?
Mm-hmm. It'll add you to the drawing for the gifts. And then programming, just, you know, really good programming going on. Staff was at Elbert Day on July 12th, and the summer reading program story time in Kiowa, they've been meeting in the park and they've had really good participation in that. One thing from Elizabeth that I wanted to highlight is that our GED program just graduated another student. And so we're really excited about that. Lisa estimates that she's graduated about 30 people since she started tutoring in 2014. See, I know.
You know what, though? Well, so, I know. I have an idea, yeah. But I'll wait till foundation. Yeah. It's a foundation.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, I know it's the things that we do that are just, but see, the thing is we can only take like one or two students at a time because we've got one employee that, you know, that does the tutoring. So that's pretty much my report. I have something else on my report, but it's actually another line item in the agenda. So
thank you very much. Number 8 is the request for reconsideration and library response.
So I just put this on the agenda because we had a request for reconsideration from a patron, and I just we let him know that if he wanted to come and talk to the library board, he could come tonight.
And I've read all that stuff just in case.
Right, yeah. Right. And so in the last two pages this is our response to him, the letter that kind of explains, you know, how is it that we selected this item and all that kind of thing. So just wanted you to be prepared in case he came tonight. He should have received the letter like last week, and we haven't heard from him about it. So, you know, it's possible he could come to a library board meeting in the future or something like that too, but just wanted to give you guys.
Your letter to return to him basically was, I thought, a pretty good explanation from the standpoint that it is a piece of fiction and it is somebody's interpretation of that fiction, and anybody, as long as it's not pornographic or I don't know, it's not seditious, I mean, it's not
pornography,
right? It's not pornography, and that's the main criteria. It's just somebody's interpretation of a historical time, and I think it's fairly clear on the cover of the deal. It is fiction. It is not an actual true account. It doesn't purport to be. I mean, it's somebody's interpretation, and That's all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you can either disagree with it or agree. I mean, you in your letter, you basically pointed that all out.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that person can have a I don't think their view can hold water standpoint of their objection.
I'm curious as to what spurred him on into singling it out, a 2017 publication that has been on the shelves for ever, and all of a sudden he finds it offensive. I'm curious, just maybe he's...
I think he glossed over the part that it was fiction.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, he said in his, you know, he said that it's generally fiction, you know, in his comments. So
I think he was aware.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we
appreciate... Makes me want to watch it.
Yeah, me too. It could be so fictional.
Let's have some popcorn.
Yeah, after, yeah. Sorry. The reviews I read, though.
Yeah, it sounded...
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah. So, but anyway.
Okay, number 9, staffing line item budget update. I assume that's Ms. Susan.
So originally, I wanted to ask you to move funds from our undesignated fund to the general fund. But luckily, I learned in the meantime that I can't, that we have to do a lot more if we're going to do that. So if you look at the end of my report, I have some notes from Mia Gonzalez, who's the DOLA budget program administrator. And she talks about three kinds of budget amendments. So it's at the end of my evaluation, my report. No,
right here.
My board report.
Page 3 of 3.
It's the Board of Trustees regular meeting. It's library director.
Yeah. So it's just on page 3 of that. My report. I just tacked it on to the end of my board report. So.
Should come right after the budget to actual, Alessandra.
After what?
After the budget to actual.
I'm sorry, I should have put it on a separate page.
Oh, that's okay.
So she talked about three kinds of budget amendments that are identified in the law. So there's like a supplemental amendment. So like if we received a grant, for example, we would have to do that as a budget amendment. And then we would have to have a budget hearing and a notice in the newspaper for that. So that's the first kind. The second kind is a transfer amendment. And that's what I had wanted to ask you to do, to transfer funds between the undesignated fund to the general fund. And that also requires a budget notice in the newspaper and a hearing. And then the third kind of budget amendment is a contingency amendment. And that's like, say, this flood was so bad that we had to, you know, like
replace the carpeting
or something like that. Then, you know, that is like an emergency situation. So we wouldn't have to have, we do it at a public meeting, but it wouldn't have to be a budget hearing and a notice in the newspaper. And so when Ruth Ann and I were at the SDA meeting, the board member training, some of them had talked about how when they have their regular budget hearing, they do a one-time budget amendment at that same meeting. So they're using I'm not sure if it's the same public hearing, or like I don't know if you need a separate public hearing, but it's at the same meeting. and you need a separate budget notice, or if it's up, you know, or if I can put them both together in the newspaper, that part I have to learn yet. But that it just tells me that we can just vote on all those kinds of things at one time. So, because we have our meeting in October, when I bring the budget to you, I bring the draft to you, I think in September. And then in October, we have the public hearing where any members of the public can come and talk, you know, make comments about our budget. And at that time, I can bring you also those amendments. But I think I've decided to do another workaround anyway. So if you look at the budget, let's start up again. Oh my gosh, this rain. So if you look at the profit and loss statement, the bottom line is I want to put just a little bit extra in the branch manager's salary, which is on the first page. It's line item 16015. So because I'm hiring a new branch manager, I might need a little bit of extra money to be able to negotiate the branch manager, you know, whoever I'm bringing in. So I was thinking I would ask for about $5,000 to be added to that line item. But I think what we can do is I've got a line item that we rarely use. If you look on page 2, about two-thirds of the way down, it's line 46670, computer tech report. So I've got $30,000 in that line item that I don't use very, very often. So if you guys were okay with it, we could vote about it tonight.
Okay, now just a minute. Which line is it? 4670.
Yeah.
70. Yeah. That's where I was off. Okay.
Yeah. So if you look down the second column, it says there's about $30,000. Yeah. We've only used about $1,332.48 out of that. So we could take like $5,000 out of that and then transfer it to the branch manager line item. And that's within the budget. So if you guys are okay with it, you could do.
I could make a motion.
Okay.
Do it.
Okay. I would make a motion that we move $5,000 from the computer tech support line item, which currently it's item 46670 on the January through June actual budget report. And so it's out of that $30,000, we would move $5,000 to line item 16015, which is the branch manager salary. So we would add $5,000 to that line from this other line. That makes sense. We have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 So I'm going to put a minus here. And I'm going to put a plus here.
Okay, we took care of that one. Number 10, policy updates.
Okay, so this was, I brought this to you at the last meeting to kind of give you a heads up on this. And then I sent the proposed changes to you. I think it was Monday this week. So the part of it hadn't changed. So number one, to update the cost of CORA requests from $33.58 to $41.37. That is the same as it was last time. And then the social media has not changed either. So that's the same. The part three, this is there's a new law about the civil rights of immigrants that Colorado has put in place. And it's based on Senate Bill 25-276. And so I'm going to change in two places. The part where we have about the library cards,
I'm going to add that there's stuff that we don't collect, and that's the stuff that's listed here. We don't collect the place of birth, immigration, or citizenship status. We don't collect any of that stuff.
Do you collect a gift issue library card?
We don't.
Just your address, phone number?
Yeah, just address and phone number, name. And I think we do need like a birthday so that we can categorize them either as an adult or as a child. So,
establish residency, their immigration status. I mean, we don't keep any of those records or ask for any information.
Yeah, and it's not even a field like in the computer that we would ask for it. So, and then on the back of that page, after the patron confidentiality policy, I would add this. So, and I made it more generic because this is what we would do if law enforcement came. You always want to make sure that you've got an order that's been signed by a judge or a, what's the other word?
Magistrate.
Thank you. So it needs to be any document that we get. So if anybody comes in, it could be, you know, it could be about immigration, but it could be like the police, you know, in, you know, like asking for, I mean, it could be like, I don't remember if you remember Chelsea Coleman, who did our strategic planning. She had somebody, she was a library director in New Jersey, and the police came in and asked because they had somebody who had been looking at child pornography or something like that. On a,
FBI or somebody like that.
On a, yeah, somebody came in and they wanted to take the computer so that they could do forensics on the computer. But they didn't have a warrant that was signed by a judge or anything like that. So you know, it's just not any situation. You know, it's not. So if we had, I mean, it could be any kind of legal situation, any kind of legal situation, not just immigration. So I wrote it more generally, saying if law enforcement comes in, you know, they have to have something official to be able for us to do it.
And you should probably have something in there about them providing identification.
Right.
That's my concern. Right. Somebody can just go buy a police outfit someplace.
Right. So we say, if information or access is requested, contact me. And then it says, record the full name, badge number, and employer of the official requesting the information, and copy any documents such as subpoenas, orders, and warrants related to the request.
That's even if they don't, if they're not, if they just want to go to the public areas, you're saying.
Right.
You still need the ID of the person that wants to come into the public areas.
If they, I mean.
If they're requesting information.
Information or access. So either one.
Access,
if they want to come into the back area, you know, the work area. And then we define that, you know, our staff spaces, custodial areas, and storage areas, those are the non-public areas, you know, the reading and study.
What if they just come into the library? You're still going to ask for their ID and make sure that they're authorized.
But only
not
if
as a patron, you wouldn't ask them.
Not the patron, the person that claims to be the cop.
Right.
Right. But if they're just coming in to use the library, you don't ask for that information.
Yeah, of course not. But I'm assuming that a person will come in and they'll be looking for somebody.
Right. So if they're looking for information or access beyond, you know, what we can provide, and this is just defining what we provide, is like we don't let them go in the back areas. So, you know, then they would have to provide their, you know, full name, their badge number, the employer. So whoever they are, FBI, sheriff, you know.
But I understand your question. My question is, they're coming in and like looking for somebody.
Someone looks like a cop, he has a gun, and you just assume they're authorized to come in there. There's just some guy that's
just going to. Absolutely. And that's why.
So you need their ID too.
Right. And
so
that's
it should be clear.
Yeah. That's why we've got, you know, their name, their badge number, their employer, and any documents that they're bringing, such as the, you know, the signed documents, the subpoenas, the orders, the warrants signed by a judge or a magistrate.
So you don't need a warrant to just go at the regular place.
Okay. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. But you still, so you need to know who they are.
Right. Absolutely.
Do we then verify the warrants?
So the, I'm not going to, if I have time, I'm not going to do
anything until I talk to our lawyer. That's not included in the policy, but that is included in Susan's DNA. So
it's just a real torrent. Yeah.
You know, because it's just, I mean, there's one that has to be done right away and one that you have more time. I can't remember between a subpoena and a warrant. I don't remember. I think a subpoena gives you a time frame.
You appear for a hearing or a warrant. You have to let somebody come in.
Right.
But there should be some way of justifying that it is in fact a warrant. Because how many of us have seen a warrant? I've never seen a warrant.
Well, and actually I've got samples
of
all of these documents so that I know what they look like. So, but anyway.
Let your lawyer make sure that she checks.
Yeah, and I need to run the whole policy manual by our lawyer. I just haven't done that recently.
I mean, just make it clear that you need to know who these people are that are coming in. Right. Nowadays, we have all these things on TV, people wearing masks. You don't even know who they are. Are they even, you know, that's scary.
So does this look okay? I need to have
it. I think it looks very good.
I need to have it approved by September. So if you want another month to review it, to think about it.
It looked good. I read it.
And I read it too. I really don't have a problem. To me, it all looks like a sound policy. And my thought is we have a quorum here. And unless somebody objects, I'm thinking we make a motion and accept. I would make a motion to accept the policy as printed by Susan, our library director, and for that policy to become a fact of our handbook.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
My only concern is it's not quite clear that you need to identify the person when they come to the public areas, too. It just says if information and access is requested, contact the library director. Record the full name and badge number. Request the information. And because before that, you talk about the private areas where they need a warrant.
Right.
And I just want it to be clear that just coming into the public areas, they have to show identification as to who they are. They don't have to have a warrant, but they have to be a legit person. That's my biggest concern.
The next two lines identify what a public area is and a non-public area. Is that?
I'm just trying to put on the record that is my concern, that they have to identify themselves when they come to the public areas too.
Oh, okay. Because
Alessandra, my question is, if it's a police officer who's stopping in to take out a book, he does not have to identify himself. He's in the public area.
No, but...
Because they come in with guns.
Yes, but they're coming and they want... But they're looking for somebody.
And it says in the policy, you must record their name, badge number, so on and so forth. So don't you think that covers identifying them?
Yeah, assuming that's for them, if they're looking for someone, sure, a cop that comes in and wants to take a book out, you don't have to ask that information. Right. But how do you know why they're there? It's my concern.
I get the concern totally, because we're talking honestly about ICE. ICE is doing that, and they're not identifying themselves, and they're coming in. At least that's what's being reported.
Yes.
And I get that concern. But that's why I'm saying if somebody like that is coming in, it's not an officer coming in to check out a book for his daughter or his family. It's somebody that's coming in to look for somebody that they want to take away, right?
Right.
That's your concern.
If they're coming in an official, if they're on an official mission, i.e., they're in an official capacity.
They should give
That's when I think all of the things that Susan has listed there, that's what they have to provide, an ID, a badge number, a warrant, the whole thing, their whole process for being there for any kind of official act is required in that deal. If they're just showing up to use the facility for for their own personal use, well, whatever. Of course, it doesn't matter.
That's a given. But the thing is, they don't need a warrant if they're just coming into the public areas, and they could still be searching for someone.
I think they have to. If they're searching, they have to make it known that they're on a mission. They can't just come in and snoop around and then leave.
Well, but the question is, it's a public library. They could come in and walk around and look at people and not identify themselves. And we can't ask them to identify themselves. Now, perhaps if they grab somebody, we could try to ask, but I don't know how much we could do.
I agree with Ruthann. But if ICE comes in here and is looking for somebody and chooses to take someone out of the library, it's not our responsibility to take care of that situation. Yes. It is if they're coming in with a warrant for our computer.
That's not what I'm saying. We still should know who that person is. And they take someone away. You can't just, some stranger can come in and kidnap a kid.
It could happen.
No, but I'm saying it's ICE if anything, it would be ICE in this day and age.
If ICE shows up and wants to apprehend anybody, we're going to have to ask for a warrant. They're going to have to provide us
in the public areas.
I think what you're talking about is if it's somebody that is ICE-ish. Like they look like they're ICE, but maybe they're not ICE, and they're, because that is happening, that they're just coming, people are just coming that are not official.
So how do you pick and choose who?
Well, that's why you would say, can I help you at the front? You know, I can ask when I come into the library.
Yes, Ruth, and you're trying to speak. I can see.
One thought about, if someone were to come into the library masked with firearms, I would be on the phone to 911. Period. Public area, private area, any area.
Is that profiling?
We have open carry, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's right. They can come.
And COVID masks. I mean, we could go right down a rabbit hole with this, but I do get your point.
I just want to make...
I do realize what's happening in our country right now, too. And I think that it's concerning.
We can show it on the record that there was a vote of 3-1 with one sustaining from voting.
I am not sustaining from voting. I just want it made clear, and I think we are on the same wave. Like you said, you still get their name and who they are if they're an official person that are coming into the public areas. You find out who they are. I mean,
we try, but...
Maybe we should put up a sign that says anybody that comes in here that has a threatening manner, we reserve the right to refuse them service.
Well, that's part of our policy already. That's part of our, I don't know if I've got the name. It's part of the policy manual already that we don't, it's our patron rules of conduct, that we just don't put up.
We have a sign that says we have the right to refuse service to somebody acting in a threatening manner?
We don't, because that's part of our policy. We don't have a sign up about that.
And if you've got somebody that's acting in a really threatening manner, aka shooter or something, they're not going to politely give their name. They're going to be, it's going to be a dangerous situation.
It's going to be a confrontation.
And I'm sure there's a policy for that.
I'm just saying you've got to make sure the person's really a cop. And then they can do whatever they want to do and know who they are, so that if something bad happens, you at least know who the person was.
But that's Alexandra, my only concern. I would think that any of our staff would do their best to identify someone who came in looking to go into the back rooms or
I'm not talking about the back rooms. The back rooms, we've resolved that.
Well, they came in and they said they had a warrant. They want to...
If they got a warrant, that's not an issue. About just the public areas, you have a couple of men in combat outfits come in
it's nice to know who they are. If they're official cops, that's fine. You can't keep them out of the public areas, correct?
Nope.
And that's fine, but wouldn't you like to know who they are? Just get, like, when a cop comes to your house, you want to know who, their badge number and who they are, right? You're not just going to let them come in.
But yeah, that's, I mean, that's a completely different situation, though. I mean,
it's private residence.
Yeah, it's private.
No, but I understand. Yeah. But the point is, it's just common sense that you want to know who's coming in.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole frustration with this policy is that it's probably for us kind of a snowball's chance in whatever that we'll ever have this happen here. So, and you know, I understand what you're saying. And it's kind of just, I mean, what I'm trying to do here is just meet the letter of the law. So I had the law in front of me, and it was highlighted all the things that I had to cover. So I'm, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and I, but you know, is it really our responsibility to, like, confront every person that comes in the library?
But it's not every person.
It's not every person.
It's somebody that's coming in with a mission of searching for somebody, and you can tell that that's the case. It's not every person.
Right.
That's not it at all.
That's not what I'm saying at all.
It's
someone who professes to be in a position of authority.
Right.
That's what I'm getting
that's
at.
That's coming in to do a sweep, basically. Yeah. And it's not necessarily out of the realm of possibility, in my opinion, that it could happen anywhere, really, you know. And I think that I don't think that we should be asking everybody for their identification when they come in. And that does cover asking for identification when we're going into the private areas, which is absolutely you need a warrant to go through.
What I'm saying is that I'm upholding the letter of the law when they're asking for information or access from us, and whatever else they do,
But honestly, I know this is hypothetical, and it's just for discussion purposes. But say, for instance, of somebody that's out to do harm to a child, knows that their child or a parent or somebody that wants to, you know, they come into the library, they know their child is here, and they come in and they take their child. That's not our responsibility to prevent
in
that case, though, if you saw that, wouldn't you immediately call 911 then and say,
absolutely,
hey, this just happened, you know, blah, 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 and get that on the record. We're not.
Well, basically, my motion, though, is an acknowledgement that we're trying to comply. We're fabricating a mission statement here that applies to conforming to the new state laws, and that's what my motion was to cover. It is.
And I just second that, and I agree with that.
The other thing I think about is the library is no different than if we were going into a grocery store. It is no different. It's a public space. We can do the best we can. And what we can't do, we can't do. We can control what happens in our private areas. But our public areas, we can only do what we can do. And we do not need to go around asking for information from people who have come into a public area unless they're causing an issue, or you can see physically that they are being aggressive. And then you call 911.
And then, I mean, in that kind of situation is going to fall under our patron rules of conduct, you know, but that's That's not the behavior that they
should. I'm not talking about any behavior. I'm just talking about a person that professes to be a law enforcement individual. Isn't it good common sense to find out who they are? And then they can go into the public areas and do whatever.
But I don't think we can ask that. I think that's what
But most officers would offer that.
they wouldn't.
Assuming that's fine. But we already know that ICE doesn't do that.
But we cannot control ICE. The staff in the library can only do what is in our policy. They can ask. They can look for the warrant or the subpoena. And if they are not given it, they cannot make these people give it.
There's two different things here, and I think you answered my question earlier. You said, yes, access means into the public areas, but then you need a warrant to go to the private areas. I agree. That's all fine. I just thought that the way it was stated wasn't clear that if they want access to even the public areas, that you should find out who they are. Make sure that they're a cop and not just some person that's out to do harm.
Public areas are public areas.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into a lot of what ifs, because we can do what if.
It's just a matter of language, but that's okay.
Our language covers what the state requires.
And that's what I was trying to do. I've got the law, that I tried to distill down into language that we could use in our policy. So, okay.
My motion still stands.
Well, it was voted, right?
Yeah.
You voted it.
We did vote.
I think it warranted discussion.
Yes, though. We vote. We just went to discussion where we should have done the discussion before we voted. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. But that's okay.
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 I understand your concern.
Well, yeah. Language is important to me. I hate to say it in the way. The problems you get in, people interpret words differently, and that's when you get into problems, and that's what I was trying to avoid.
Sure.
Okay. Any public comment? I don't think so. We don't have our gentleman here. Any other items, business from the board members?
I have one question. Is Elizabeth having an Elizabeth Days this summer or not? Is that?
It's Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, it's done.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then it's irrelevant.
The Chamber of Commerce is having something.
Yeah.
Well, if the Chamber of Commerce is having something, is it going to be a one-day affair on Main Street? Should we, as the library, have a booth there or not?
We have several things coming up, but I don't know. There's things that we are not participating in, but we are going to participate in the Boo Bash, which is their Halloween one. And we're also participating in the mayor's tree lighting.
Yes, the Christmas
one. Okay, we also have a booth apparently at the fair.
No, we do not have a booth at the fair.
There is the Chamber of Commerce has a rodeo sometime in September. Yeah. And there are booths there, so.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. All right, any other business? All right, our next meeting is Wednesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. here at Elizabeth, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.